China's car dealers report the first drop in sales in almost 30 years. Is driving just not cool anymore?
It's still cool.
Oh, really? Maybe it depends on what kind of car you drive. Maybe not.
It depends on where you drive.
Oh, where you drive. Okay. And or has the market reached saturation after decades of rapid expansion? Or is the trade dispute to blame in this case? Well, we're very much looking at the fresh figures that came out at the end of 2018. And let's look at the situation of car sales slowing down for the very first time in 20 years.
Well, that's right. In 2018, Chinese auto manufacturers produced 4.16% fewer cars and sold 2.76% fewer than the year before. And that's according to Chinese Association of Auto Manufacturers. Overall, the industry produced almost 27.8 million and sold slightly over 28 million cars. So that's not bad. They are still selling more than they can produce. And although some 4S stores, they are reporting that it takes 1.5 months or longer to clear the inventory. And among the manufacturers, sales of passenger vehicles were hit the hardest. The year 2018 saw 23.7 million of them sold, a decline by 4.08%. And among the top 10 manufacturers that sold the most cars, five saw their sales decrease year on year in the first 11 months of 2018. Most of China's self-owned brands failed to fulfill their sales target set for 2018. However, joint venture brands such as FAW Volkswagen, BAIC Volkswagen, Guangdong Auto Honda, Dongfeng Nissan saw their sales increase in the first 11 months of 2018. And also, meanwhile, Chinese consumers in 2018 bought 1.25 million new energy automobiles, an increase by 61.7% over the year 2017. So that's I would say a dramatic increase.
That's a lot of meat that needs some unpacking, actually.
True.
Yeah, so Anila, how do you read these figures? I mean, when you look at domestic manufacturers and the joint ventures, they're performing very differently here. And also, just overall, passenger cars don't seem to be the most wanted big-ticketed item anymore.
I think there should be a lot of factors that triggering these figures that we're seeing, and one of the major reasons I would say, like for example, if you look at 20 years ago, the middle class was much smaller, and over time it expanded. But now we're seeing China, of course, like by 2020, we're going to see poverty being eradicated in the country. So that means a lot of people can actually afford cars. And basically, when you look at it, it just means technically that people who actually could afford cars and needed cars already have them. And a lot of people are not seeing the need to keep on buying or changing their cars every other year. And on top of that, we have the car sharing models right now, like Didi Dacha, which is kind of like perhaps also influencing these kinds of things.
Well, okay, when we look at the situation, certainly a lot of factors come into play. And I suppose this is one of the markets that globally, so many car makers have for years been looking at China as this is the expanding market.
It's the largest market, actually.
Exactly. So, but now with the slowing down of these car sales, especially automobile targeting at the family use, I suppose, there is a lot to be discussed here. So what do you think are some of the key reasons that's driving this phenomenon?
I think we perceive this problem through different perspectives. For average consumers or just average people like us, at least I feel like I'm losing the demand for a car because of the rising popularity of tax hailing applications, where I can just click a few buttons on my smartphone and summon a car to my rescue whenever I need it. And then there's also the growing traffic congestion problem. I will say 5 years ago, I've developed this idea that maybe I don't need to own a car in Beijing. I didn't even bother to get a driver's license precisely because I have good public transportation here in the city, and also precisely because sometimes I feel like I could spend hours on a highway without getting anywhere. So that's what we perceive as average consumers. Whereas perhaps those industry insiders, they may look at this issue differently. For instance, some of them might believe that maybe there are already enough people who own cars. Maybe the market has reached a saturation point. And then there are also business insiders who are looking at policy issues. So actually, the slowdown of car sales in China has been showing some signs many years ago. In September 2015, amidst sluggish sales, China's fiscal and tax authorities decided to cut the vehicle purchase tax in half for small passenger vehicles. And so a vehicle purchase tax was originally set at about 10% of the purchase price. Mm-hmm. So a consumer who spends 100,000 yuan on a small car was expected to pay about 8,500 yuan on the purchase tax. But with the tax cut, they only had to pay about 4,200 yuan. So you can see that's a policy that the authorities ruled out to encourage car sales. And that was that happened in 2015. And then the policy was set to expire in 2017, but was extended until January 2018. Although with a weaker 25% discount, a consumer who spends 100,000 yuan, again, on a small car was expected to pay about 6,400 yuan on the purchase tax. Mm-hmm. And the tax cut drove the annual car sales from 17 million, I think I would presume before 2015, to more than 28 million. But some business insiders estimate it has overdrafted the market demand by 4 million. Namely, a lot of the people who may previously be thinking about getting a car this year or next year, because the policy, they realized that maybe the policy would no longer be there. They borrowed money, or they borrowed money from a bank, that sort of thing. And they did the purchase last year. And then as a result, we see a decrease in demand this year and hopefully in the years to come.
I remember it was a big deal back then, and because in China, owing a car has increasingly become very expensive, and there are some visible costs and some invisible costs that are also dear. And just think about, if you live in one of the top biggest cities in China, like Beijing, Shanghai, these cities, you only get to drive, if you really want to, maximum 6 days instead of 7 days a week. Mm-hmm. Because there's one day your car's got to be resting in the car garage or wherever you store it. So, I mean, when you add that into the mix, actually owning a car doesn't sound so great, because apparently we all need to pay for a better environment. And car owners, well, you know, think about that as well when you are getting a car.
And what's interesting is that more and more Chinese cities are implementing this kind of policy. And I think last year, at the end of last year, I paid a visit to Guizhou. I think we shared the story on our show before. And I was surprised to find out that even the city of Guiyang was implementing this policy of, for instance, limiting the amount of days the cars can spend on the roads. They have a system whereby they allow a car to enter the downtown area of Guiyang for 4 days, and then they have to stay off the downtown area for 4 days, so that sort of thing. So the similar policies are being introduced in different cities across the country, and that, I think that would amount to a dent in people's demand for cars.
Yeah, so you better think about how much availability is the car on the road.
I mean, for me personally, I've just never really understood why anyone would need a car in a big city like Beijing, especially the first tier cities and even the second tier cities where public transportation is so convenient. You can just get outside and get mm-hmm. a bus and get outside and get on a subway, and you know, you don't have to spend a lot of time stuck on traffic unless you have children that you actually need to use a car to ferry them from one place to another. So I've never really understood why. And also when you look at in terms of like parking spaces, even if you're not driving that car, it's still expensive for you because you still have to pay for the parking space where that car is resting. So I think a lot of people now are getting smarter.
Mm-hmm.
And also they're realizing it's actually much faster if you use, let's say, the subway to get from point A to point B, rather than, like you say, Liming, getting stuck for hours on the road. And in the process, it's time consuming. And at the same time, you're also wasting money.
Yeah. But a lot of us are so fortunate as to fail to understand that perhaps in some cases, we are fortunate to live close by.
Oh, yes. Where we work. That's a luxury.
Yeah, whereas perhaps there are people who live a little, like a few hours away from where they work. And there are people who have kids and they would prefer to drop the kids off at the school and then they go on to where they work, that sort of thing. Not everyone is as fortunate, at least as I am, to live like in 20 minutes to work. I mean, that I should count myself so lucky, but there are people out there who are struggling, and having a car is only mildly helping them with the struggle a little bit.
Can I share a little bit of...
You try to work.
of, I suppose, owning expensive... item and not really enjoying much of the benefit often it feels. Well, I live 18 kilometers away from work one way.
Mm-hmm.
So,
but at least probably when you drive your car, you're going the opposite of the traffic.
Oh, yes. Well, yeah, we've talked about this. I'm really lucky that way. So there is a silver lining that I'm sort of, because of, you know, the location of our work, so I'm sort of traveling against the traffic tide, mm-hmm. and that's cool. But, actually, there is one benefit I do enjoy. That is I get to have, like, my personal space when I'm driving to work and back home, and I can listen to my favorite podcasts and consider Roundtable one of them.
And when you are stuck, you are stuck in your own space. You don't get to smell the unpleasant smells emitting from other passengers.
Exactly.
In the subway.
So I think that is... definitely a huge benefit. But Liming, you're totally right. I mean, traveling and commuting is really a pain for those who live in big cities and have to get from A to B. And another thing, I suppose, why there is this huge change in people's perception towards a car is that it's no longer as much of a social status symbol anymore. Mm-hmm. Like, I remember when I first got our family car, it was a big deal. And that was decades ago. And it was something that, of a symbol, like you made it. And my dad was very proud of getting a car. And now it just seems like that's no longer the case. Because if you look at the people with, maybe this person's got three cars in his garage, but he still need to fight the traffic to get to city center. Isn't it great? Sometimes you realize that everybody's equal when it comes to traffic jams. And then this guy, he's probably still like getting a DD, hailing a car or renting a car to drive him and drop him off at the destination. So he doesn't need, or he's kind of forced to leave his car back at home. And I remember ages ago when business people, when they struck a deal, sometimes people get, okay, for the first time, okay, mm-hmm. people get overly excited when they're saying goodbye. Why is that? And well, one person would insist to accompany the potential business partner to the garage, to wherever the car is being parked, so therefore this person can see, oh, my potential business drive partner is driving a BMW, of the fancy one. And yeah, well, it seems like he's a trustworthy one, but if he's driving a Xiali, I don't know how to say that in English, actually, but a humble
they don't
car,
know make those.
Maybe there will be no future business deal. But that kind of thing has changed so much.
So owning a car is no longer a symbol of prestige. That's for sure. Now that a lot more people can afford it. I mean, even people who choose not to have a car, a lot of them could probably very easily afford one. And to think of someone who owns an apartment in Beijing, they can when they sell the apartment, they can easily afford, let's say, quite a dozen.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, owning a car, it is possibly no longer a must. I mean, when back in the day, okay, let's do a comparison here. 40 years ago, the tales that my parents tell me when a couple gets married, there's the
bicycle.
The bicycle, the TV, what else? The sewing machine, or was that the...
Yeah, the sewing machine.
The generation before that. Okay. Mm-hmm.
So these are the symbols of status.
Major items you must have before you start a new life.
You get married. Mm-hmm. And then as we fast forward 20 years, 30 years, and then it's the...
Colored TV, fridge, washing machine, that sort of thing.
Oh, okay. What about, let's just fast forward a little bit more then. And then it was the car, right?
In the 90s or and 2000s.
Yeah, having the car was the big thing, and preferably maybe having a flat. But if not, at least having the ability to put the down payment in place, that kind of thing. And maybe now the car is out of the picture?
At least when I got married, we didn't have... a car, and I still haven't won the lottery in Beijing, so
and that's another thing. This is not a economic and financial decision of
it's not
the
like when
household.
You have the money, you can afford it, then you can get one. In some cities there are restrictions on when and how much or how many cars you can have. In China, I think in the end of 2018, the one lottery that I failed to win, the odds of winning or getting a license plate for a car that runs on gas was 2,250 to 1.
Wow.
Yeah. And if you don't trust your odds, if you don't think you're lucky enough, you can also apply to waiting line to get one of those license plate for new energy cars, you know, so electric or hybrid power cars. And I look into this, and if you join the queue now, by the year 2026, you may be able to get your car. I'm sorry.
And that's the new energy one, right?
Yeah.
And the new energy cars have been enjoying this preferential policy, and which explains why a lot of folks decided, I suppose, to ditch the traditional and really go for the green future in a way, because it's just a practical thing to do.
Yeah, if you join the queue now, a lot of people who are a little reluctant to join the queue might feel like maybe the battery technologies and other technologies may have not developed enough, that maybe when they get an electrical car, it wouldn't last long. But think of this in the historical perspective. I mean, by the time you get your car, I mean, the car manufacturers may already have perfected the technologies, and you will get a decent car.
Well,
unless you have a lot of patience, though, to wait that long. Well, if you have a lot of patience, wait until 2026.
Well, if you must have one, then I suppose patience is also what you must have.
Well, another thing is, some folks are just treating this like it's a limited resource. And if I don't get in the game ASAP, then I'm going to be left out. Because just think about those people, I suppose, were of the right age and earning abilities 10, 20 years ago. They didn't have this limitation on getting a license plate. So it's just often it's whoever's in the game a bit earlier, and then you sort of get the upper hand and you enjoy the benefits like early. And I think it's that kind of thinking that's propelled some people to maybe even not if they've got such a great urgency, but they would still join the car plate, the license lottery. So,
true. I think that mentality does have a part to play in the amount of people who are in the lottery or the amount of people who are queuing for a new energy car plate. Because people like me, I sort of made decision not to own a car because I don't use it very often. I live very close to where I work. But nonetheless, because the odds of winning is so slim that I think of it as a reward. If I am in the lottery, if I win it, then I will spend some of my savings to get one. I mean, what are the odds of winning that lottery? I mean, that's winning is a reward enough in itself.
This is so interesting when you look at the car sales in China. Some people would interpret it as sort of a barometer of how the economy is doing, but actually, you really need to see the whole picture to understand what's really going on. And China's just going through so much economic and social change, and everything's just, I feel, just going at a fast-forward speed. And we've seen that those decades of rapid car sales expansion, and in 2018, another interesting thing was that a lot of the car sales happened in second tier and in smaller cities.
Yeah,
so there is actually this saturation point to some extent, I suppose, even when it comes to such a big market like China.
Mm-hmm.
But what do you think is the plan going forward, or what's going to happen next?
What's going to happen next? I'm not quite sure, because some people who base their judgment on the assumption that maybe the economy isn't doing very well. I don't know what they can do, but my suggestion is to look at the bright side, because early on we shared the figures on the sales figures of new energy cars, and it turns out they saw an increase of 61.7% over the year 2017, and that's considering a lot of people like me who are a little reluctant to go into the new car business, new energy car business, because we fear that maybe the technology hasn't been well developed yet. But even so, in 2018, Chinese consumers bought 1 million electric and hybrid vehicles, and an increase of 88.5% from the year before. That's interesting. We seem to have conflicting figures. But I guess the point is that's a sector that is still enjoying dramatic increase. Meanwhile, the rapid expansion comes with a cost. A report by the Security Daily revealed the industry recalled 135,000 vehicles, 13% of the all new energy vehicle sales. So, like I said, we are still having some kind of problems, and I have confidence in some of the car manufacturers in their efforts to improve their technologies. Certainly, when you have 13% of cars being recalled, that is a problem, and that means there's a huge potential for people to improve.
And you add a chuckle. This is a very complicated situation. So, Nila, when you look at all these people who have the demand, we all need to travel, right? Mm-hmm. From work to home or go out and see friends. I mean, do you see people ditching the automobile and or not in the future?
I don't think, okay, short term, this could be just a setback short term for many car manufacturers, but I do think for sure as a society, like the middle class expands, a lot of people are gonna get lured back into showrooms when it comes to the new energy cars, like you said. But also at the same time, we have to point out, we cannot just ignore the fact that now the trade tensions between the US and China might have also affected the results from last year, whereby you see a lot of cars, a lot of car manufacturers have a lot of potential in much smaller cities. And people from these cities are not as affluent as people from big cities like Beijing. So obviously they're making very cautious decisions when it comes to buying cars.
Another direction is to go overseas. Like He Yang just mentioned, a lot of the car sales in recent years, they were made in second and even smaller cities. And therefore, I think maybe the cars that are being made in China, they are good for a particular consumer group. And I'm thinking that maybe going to, some developing countries where the consumers would have demand for cheap but durable cars, I mean, that could be a way to go.
And also used cars, or put it bluntly, secondhand cars. When so many people have their first car, well, what about selling it and getting a new one? You're listening to Rant Table.